You're very welcome back. 086 60 25,000 is our WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right now, on Wellness Wednesday, we welcome onto the programme mental health advocate Niall Breslin. Hiya, Niall. How are you getting on?
I'm very good. How are you guys?
It's good to have you on the show. Now, you have launched your first live Where In My Mind podcast. It's in Donegal and on Green on Theatre in Letterkenny on the 28th of October. But before we talk about sort of the live experience, talk to me about the Where Is My Mind podcast.
Yeah, I started that quite a few years ago now, when not everybody on earth had a podcast. I was kind of figuring out how I could bring the information that I was studying and learning around mindfulness. I thought mindfulness was this really misunderstood area. It's oversold, number one. It is also really misunderstood in what it actually is. We often refer to it as mindfulness light. It's just a word we hear, especially around wellness, but actually no one really understands what it is. So what I wanted to do is to bring what I was studying, my master's and now my PhD, and bring it to an understandable, relatable kind of space, to kind of teach people how to better take care of their heads in the head-melty chaos of the modern world. And the modern world is head-melty, let's be honest.
Yeah, and I think you're really hitting something there, because I do find, through mindfulness, it's a little bit easier for me, because we discuss mental health issues quite often on this program. But even in physical health, you know, when people start talking about calories and calorie deficits and carbs, and, you know, so in terms of both physical and mental health, I think a lot of us would have more interest in it if we could grasp it, if we could say, oh, right, okay, but what does that actually mean? What is mindfulness? So how do I get myself into that space? What are the tools that I need to equip myself with?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because I find the whole wellness area completely confusing. And I've been a professional athlete. I've worked on, you know, this area. I've studied this area, and I still feel half the time that it's just people who are good at communicating but don't have huge levels of knowledge of what they're communicating. The thing about mental health is subjective. Everybody has a different situation. Everybody has a different life experience. Everyone's all these different things. And if you ever see somebody hop on and go, here's the three ways that can solve all your problems, it's nonsense. It's without context, that means nothing. So what I always try to do with the podcast is I don't speak from a place of hierarchy, like I've figured all this out, because I certainly haven't. I'm on my own little journey with my own head and how I'm navigating it. But what mindfulness ultimately is for me is teaching yourself the space you take up in society and the space society takes up in you. And what I mean by that is this world's moving too fast. It just moves too fast. We're trying to all keep up, and fair play if you can, I can't. And mindfulness is often about the ability to actually diffuse and step yourself back from all that for a second and actually just sit with whatever's there, whatever's in you, whatever you're feeling, whether it's good or bad, whether it's anxious or happy, doesn't matter. It's learning to sit with that. And you might think that doesn't sound important, but that's absolutely crucial, because often we are so mindless, we're so out of our heads trying to keep up the world, that we miss living it. We miss living the stuff that's right in front of us.
Do you know, the way I try and sort of imagine it in my head, or if a space I try and get into, do you know, in the airport, you know, there's travelators on the flat, you know, you can stand on them, right? Sometimes I like to step on one of those and just step to the side, and just allow the power of technology to move me, whilst there are people rushing past me on the travelator, rushing past me up on the other side,
really
on their feet and all. And I just sit there and I hold on to the little rubber handle and I think for a moment, you know what, I'm actually really quite relaxed, because I look around me. Now, I'm not saying people around me aren't relaxed, but it's just in that moment. So try and sort of get in that mind space that I'm just standing on the travelator, chilling out. I mean, perfect time. Might even have a pint. Who's to say? I'm not advocating. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Why not?
And everyone else, don't go on the travelator if you're going to run on it.
See these metaphors. This is a prime example of teaching people how to understand or relate to something that they've seen or experienced before. I think the other thing that I think about a lot is, you know, I have had a weird eclectic life background, from professional sport to music to all sorts of things. And the one thing I've learned as I got a little older is the most important thing you will do is learn how to rest. Genuinely how to rest properly, sitting on your arse and doing nothing and not feeling guilty about it. And the minute we do that, we often fill that space with, okay, I'm going to read a self-help book, how to better myself in this 2 hours. Self-help books are fine. But you know what? Sometimes the best thing you can do is nothing, genuinely nothing. And it's really difficult to do that without picking up your phone and seeing some guy on social media telling you that you're a failure if you're not going to the gym at 3 a.m. and having flaxseed smoothies at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, but Niall, obviously a lot of time you avoid those quiet moments, those not busy moments, because you are when life is not in your head, then you'd be concerned or occupied with what your mind can stick in there. Circular thinking, worrying about, you know, I'm happy at the moment, I must find something to worry about because I function best when I'm nervous or anxious or worrying about something. So how do we clear that space so that when we do take those moments to do nothing, that it's not something we fear?
Yeah, I mean, that's on the money. Like, avoidance is the root of all disorder. We like to avoid things. We either try to out-train them. Let's go to the gym 8 times a day just so I don't have to deal with this stuff that is internal, that is causing me overwhelm or stress or whatever it might cause you. The big thing about mindfulness is the first port of call for mindfulness is non-judgment. And that's a big word. Like, non-judgment, you say to somebody, our entire life revolves around judgment, how we look, what we do, you know, what we eat. Everything is judgment. And the real great way to start mindfulness, to sit in silence and just notice your breath or your body, or have a focus and a thought, which playing a round of golf in your head, whatever it might be, is see what it feels like not to judge yourself in that moment, just to let go of that. Like, when you, this is going to happen, you're going to start going, I'm terrible at this, my mind is racing, I shouldn't be doing this. Just notice yourself saying that and see what it feels like to let that go. Just be aware of it and let it go. And that's the shackles of expectation that aren't required in meditation or mindfulness. There's no one judging you here. There's no Olympic Games for meditation. And the thing about it is, my favorite thing is people who take pictures of themselves meditating. I'm like, great. It's become performative. People go, look how relaxed and calm I am. I don't need to see that. That's your space. It's for you. Whatever that is for you, if it's 5 minutes in the day, if it's an hour, if it's going for a walk, if it's getting into cold water, it's just your space and nobody has a right to it. And I think that element of non-judgment is a really powerful attitude and principle if you can bring it to any aspect of your life, because life is bloody hard sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of the time. I'm really encouraged by the space we're getting into now, and knock me back if I'm wrong, but early on in terms of, and I'm not talking about you, Niall, per se, but early on in when we started sort of mental health advocacy, it was almost like, you know, I'm successful in sport or I'm successful in music, but I've had my struggles just like you. Then I did this and now I feel good. Mm-hmm. And I found that really quite, I found that the way it was handled years ago was counterintuitive, because for a lot of people with mental health issues, they know it's onwards. It's, you live with it or you cope with it. Not for everyone all the time. And then when you hear these stories of the typical, everything was great, hit a low, now I've figured out how to get back to where I am, it was, it's not achievable. And I think for some people that was compounding where they're at. Now we're conversing in a way whereby we accept that, you know, you have to take measures or tool yourself up to, it's who you are, and to be in control and to be as happy as you possibly can, recognizing that there are going to be times again when it's difficult.
That's like, this is exact. These are the conversations that people need to hear. Like, I've struggled with that as well. And just for absolute clarity, I'm not in this perfect utopia space of my own life. I just amn't. And I'm on a spectrum constantly where I go through periods where I feel I have purpose, where I feel connected to the world, where I feel connected to those around me. And there's periods I don't feel like that. For example, I find January really difficult. I get really affected by weather. I get really affected by the, I get tired. I can't sleep, weirdly enough. And it hits me. But the fact is, I'm aware that that's what happens to me in January. And with that awareness, I can do something with that. I can actually not be so hard on myself when it happens. I can take baby steps. I don't have to save the world in January. I can just take that space. And I know that now in myself. And there's periods in my life where I revert back to these moments where I can really use myself as a punch bag. And that is why I'm constantly in therapy. I've made that decision in my life that this is something that I do struggle with sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I go through waves. And actually, you go back to mindfulness. Mindfulness is built upon Buddhist psychology. This is not religious. This is just where mindfulness comes from. And the first noble truth of Buddhism is suffering is part of life. It is part of your life. Mm-hmm. It is part of it. You're going to lose people you love. You're going to have stressful situations. You're going to have relationship problems. That's life. No one sidesteps that stuff. And actually, the wellness industry sometimes tells you to sidestep that stuff and pretend it doesn't exist. That's just another form of silence. We've had silence for too long. But one thing I will say that's really important, in my PhD at the moment, I'm looking at when we only gave the voice to professionals, when it was only professionals, psychiatrists and generally psychiatrists and medical men, as they were called in the last 150 years, they had a huge level of power over the narrative around mental health. And I don't think that's right either. I think it's important that we share this narrative to people who've experienced mental health issues. And if somebody wants to be a role model who's mm-hmm. a famous footballer or GAA player and reach out to young people and say to them, I go through this stuff, I haven't solved all this stuff, nor will I. That's a powerful thing.
And that story is now more nuanced. And it wasn't my criticism wouldn't be how the person themselves were relating it. It was how it was being packaged, I think, sometimes by the media. Now, because no one puts themselves out there unless they're hoping to reach the people that you talk of. We have a situation whereby we've perhaps never talked more about mental health. We've never talked more about the mental health of young people and acknowledged it. But also we've never seen the rates of people needing services, self-harm. Do you share a concern I have that we need to make sure that we're talking about it correctly? That because the two things don't make sense to me. We're talking about it, we've awareness, there's decent supports in schools and you'll see the posters on the walls and all that type of stuff. But at the same time, we're seeing record numbers of people on drugs, which I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because sometimes it allows people to see the woods for the trees and plot their path forward. But in terms of people, you know, going to centres with mental health issues, self-harm and what have you, do you have a concern that we need to make sure we're getting the conversation right now? So whilst we have this awareness and this conversation, that we're productively helping people?
I must say I'm immensely impressed with the kind of oversight that you have of this, because this is something that isn't talked about. And as I said, my entire next 5 years of my life is dedicated to my PhD to try and understand where we're at. So I'm looking at the last 150 years of intervention for mental health, and it has been pretty draconian and brutal when you look at what we used to do in Ireland, institutionalization. By 1950, we had the highest level of people in coercive confinement in the world, more than the USSR. Ireland loved putting people into institutions. So we have a legacy of that, and it's still in our health system. And our health system, most of us read the CAMHS report that came out recently. My entire research is based around this CAMHS report. And the CAMHS Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services report was one of the grimmest and most difficult things I have read in a long time. Sad that we are one of the richest countries in Europe and we're failing children at the level we're failing them at. It's not acceptable. But one of the main things they said in that report is if we continue just to use the same model of care for children, we are going to be having this conversation in 50 years. And what they meant by that is if we treat every issue a child has as a biological issue, pathological, there's something wrong with them, their brain is broken. Rather than they need a bit of help, they need to navigate their worlds. They need to have assessments to make sure that they might be struggling with their worlds. And when they get those assessments very quickly, then we intervene and we create a world that's more easy for them to navigate. That's a mental health service. That's what we got to be aiming at. So societally, we are reducing the stigma, and it's amazing to see it. But systematically, since I started this work 10 years ago, the Irish mental health system for children has got worse.
Mm. And also taking the action that you talk of, but whilst recognising something you've mentioned already, that life does come at you quick. Life is tough. There will be loss. There'll be disappointment, and you'll have to deal with things. But again, there are some people that think that the way we're bringing children up now, we're not equipping them for what happens when life hits you. That sometimes you don't win. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Can I just say quick? Sorry,
please. Yes, Lyle, it's your interview. Go ahead.
A Lust for Life, which is the charity that I co-founded, focused specifically on early preventative models in primary schools. We're in over 1,000 primary schools. We look at emotional intelligence, emotional literacy, and part of that is to say to people, you are going to be knocked and you're going to have to figure out how to get back on your own feet. Yeah. We'll support you, but that's life. And as soon as we, you know, I think there's a fine line between that and my mum in the 80s used to, if you had a snotty nose, she put you on an antibiotic because that's what you did. And like, rather than go, maybe let your immune system fight this off a little bit. That's how you build resilience, is by understanding that sometimes the world will come at you and things will be difficult. And what psychologists call that a psychological flexibility, the ability to bend and the inevitable stuff that's going to come your way. And we need to let children know that. We need to let them know. We always want to keep children safe. We need them to let them know that they're safe. That's such a crucial part of a child. They need to feel safe. But they also need to understand that life will be difficult sometimes. And here's the tools to deal with it when it does happen. That's how you intervene. Ireland is a population of 5 million. We're the size of Manchester. If we cannot be world leaders in this, if we cannot aim to be world leaders at creating better mental health supports for children, I don't know which country can.
And no, we're very well. And it's not just in that area. It's in so many different areas, especially when we're told we're so well resourced. Let's start diverting. Instead of giving the odd tax break here or the odd 200 quid there, you know, people want money spent on services. That's what the population want. But unfortunately, I'm not sure if we're going to be going in that direction. And also to now, just in terms of the mindfulness before we get back to the podcast. I mean, people are caught in, dependent on what form of poor mental health that they have, they can see no hope or can't get out of it, or this is the way I am, or this is how I operate. But you can, if you can give yourself a little bit of space to see your shoulders drop, to see maybe your heart rate slow down, you can see that you don't necessarily have to live your life constantly at the drive or at the way you are feeling. So mindfulness, presumably quite early on, people could start seeing the benefits of it. And once you see the benefits of it, then you can fully embrace it.
Yeah, I often say I think we've created such a stressful world that I don't think a lot of people know what it feels like not to be stressed anymore. It just feels like a default setting that we are now in, because as I said, this our brains weren't built for this world. It is just too fast. It's too much information. And it overwhelms and overloads the brain. And look, we just came through a global pandemic, you know, and one of the things I say to people, if you're rinsed and you're anxious and you're exhausted right now, good, you should be. We have had a tough few years. And in the words of Elton John, you're all still standing. So maybe you're a little tougher than you think you are. And it's knowing that, and it's that language of empowerment and saying to people, you know, what we do know through psychology and some of the biggest writers in the world, like Viktor Frankl and Dr. Rita Rieger, is that we need to create hope. Hope is everything. Hope is every single thing for somebody who finds themselves in a dark place. Whatever that hope might be, oh my God, I can take a breath here. I don't have to keep up. Or it might be something deeper than that, where you need psychological support and therapeutic support. So that's when we have to fight to make sure that people, no matter who they are, whatever walks of life they are, whatever jobs they have, that we can create access to intervention to support them when they need it straight away. In their community, in a way that they're not stigmatized. That is how you solve problems. And I look at people and I look at people struggling right now, and we got to let them know there is hope. That's the key. But we have to be political here as well. This won't be solved by nice slogans by me. It'll be solved by political action. It'll be solved by political will and brave and courageous leadership. I don't believe politicians don't care about this. I just think it scares them.
I think it's the too overwhelmed at the job in hand. But as you referenced the population here, we're in a prime position to show international best practice, to be the leaders in this. We did it with the smoking ban. We've done it in different areas. Why not this if the will is there? And also, too, as you mentioned, we also, where we can, and everyone's situation is different, and I recognise that, we have to do our bit ourselves as well and take that step. And not, because the thing too is we can put the barriers up on ourselves. It's crazy, isn't it, that we know we probably know what we need to do, but our mind and the brain's a funny thing in that it will do things it thinks it's protecting you. You know, it's like people who get stage fright. Your mind's telling you can't go up on that stage, right? Because if you go up on that stage, you might come to harm. And you're saying to your brain, well, no, I won't. So, you know, we have to take a bit of control there. I mean, I'm saying it in really quite simplistic terms, but sometimes our brain thinks it's protecting us. It's protecting us, but it's not. We have to say, oh, I know what you're doing, brain, here to keep me safe, but I kind of know a little bit better in this situation.
You say that to a kid who's anxious, and I always say to children that we work with mindfulness, I say, listen, you have a little security guard up there, and that security guard works. It's just trying to keep you safe. That's all it's doing. It's never trying to hurt you. But sometimes it needs to take a day off, or it needs to take a break. And that's what you're teaching them, is that type of language that's accessible. And then you say, I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to teach you a little technique that you can use that will help you give that lad a break for 5 minutes. And it's, if you tell a child who's anxious and hyperactive to just breathe, it's pointless. It's a pointless thing to say to a child. It's pointless to say to an adult, generally.
Well, I always thought, just before, and hold on to your train of thought there, because, you know, I suffer a bit from anxiety here and there. It's worse sometimes than others. And it's funny, whatever the style that I have, manual breathing makes everything worse. If you know what I mean. It's one of the big solutions, but that thing where you manually breathe, I hate it. It never worked for me at all.
We got to be careful here. This is once again around, I speak with Patrick McKeown, who's the kind of leading voice in oxygen advantage and breathing. You talk to somebody who's had panic disorder or a negative relationship with their breath, the last thing you tell them is to focus on their breath. This is important. This is language. This is why we train. This is why we do our masters. This is, you know, why we don't, you know, call ourselves mindfulness teachers when you have to be accredited. You need to know what you're doing, because if you put somebody into a panic, you need to know what to do in that situation. So what I say to people, when we do a pre-assessment and we know that this person has struggled with anxiety and panic disorder, I will never ask them to focus on their breath. I will ask them to focus on their senses, their body, because it doesn't need to be the breath. You're trying to bring them into the present moment. I always say, you know, the one thing we do with kids, one thing you can smell, one thing you can see, one thing you can hear. Get them out of their heads. If you have anxiety and panic, so get them out of the heads and into the body. The body will calm you down. And this is why it's important that people like me have to be accredited if we're going to be working with people around mindfulness.
Yeah, and you know what? We could go down. Someone, a young person, came to me talking about stuff that they heard on TikTok about the area of mental health, and that we could do another half hour on that, because unfortunately, and the way the algorithm works, if a young person is struggling a bit with anxiety or mental health, they watch a video or two on TikTok. Next thing, their For You page is full of that, and it's not licensed, it's not accredited, and some of it's really, really quite worrying, and we are oblivious to it. So you really need to make sure that your child, young person in your life, is not getting their mental health advice from particularly TikTok, because the way the way the content is curated there. Right, so people are familiar with the Where Is My Mind podcast. Talk to me then about the live show on October 28th, Niall, please.
Yeah, I think it's funny with the live show. We've had a few amazing shows already in the Olympia and in Cork, and people expect it to be what we've probably just talked about here, like and the politicals. It's not that. It's quite irreverent. It's quite funny. It's quite a heartwarming look. They don't want me standing on stage being intense with them about these things, but they have to be relatable. This has to be relatable, has to be vulnerable, and has to be functional. And that's what the live podcast is. It's got music, it's got spoken word, it's got pieces I've composed by John O'Donoghue, who's my real muse in terms of my work, and it's got brilliant guests. I have an amazing guest for Donegal. I can't announce them yet, but it's an amazing guest. It's not Jim McGuinness. I was considering.
Well, if you can get him, I could do the harm.
I think he's other things in his mind.
Yeah,
right,
that's
now,
what I'm
honest.
Thinking. But, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
but I'm sure I could help him with a few stress things. But anyway, it's actually quite a fun 2 hours. But it is also, people walk away with something in their pockets. You know, that's the important thing. It's quite heartwarming. It isn't that intense. Let's talk about mental health. It's talking about my mental health. It's talking about the absolute state of my mind sometimes. And it's funny, like some of the stuff that I look back on, I can laugh about, not in a throwaway way, but in a way like I can look at it now and I can see it from a different place. And I think people relate to that. And it takes the intensity out of this conversation. And whether you're somebody going through it, or you have a loved one going through something, or you just want to understand to be a better support for the relationships in your life, this show works. It works for you. And as I said, it's got everything I love: music, mindfulness, and good chat.
And surprise guests. Okay. Niall, listen, thanks for the chat. People can get their tickets for On Green On Theatre in Letterkenny on the 28th of October from the On Green On box office. Thanks for your time today and continued good physical and mental health to you into the future. Thank you very much indeed. All right, Niall Breslin there. Back with more shortly.
Business Matters in association with ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. Now is the time to realise your potential by enrolling on the part-time degree in business. Only 3 years with one evening per week on campus and another online. Open up your future by contacting the faculty office on 918-6206 or visit lyit.ie today.
Okay, that means it's time for Business Matters, and we're joined in studio, as we are every Wednesday morning, just after 11 or after half 11 or whatever time it is, because we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. Kieran, thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
It's good to have you in. All right, as always, by the way, the Business Matters podcast is live for you right now on our website, highlandradio.com, and you can also get it on Spotify or iTunes. But we'll tell you more about that in a moment, because what we're going to do first is catch up with some news. We're starting with investment in Carrigart Hotel, Kieran.
Yeah, Greg, work has commenced on a €5 million investment in the Carrigart Hotel, which was bought recently by the Dunloe-based Bridgeburn Development Company. The well-known hotel, which has been operating since the early 1900s, was purchased by Dermot and Nina Walsh in 1946 and was subsequently taken over by the late Dermot Walsh Jr., who also ran the Portobello Hotel for a time.
Yeah, okay. Great to see work ongoing there. On the flip side, almost a restaurant closing in Dunloe.
Yeah, the husband and wife team of John and Anne Boyle, who have been running the Butter Rock restaurant in Dunloe for over 20 years, are getting ready to close their doors for the final time. Speaking to the Donegal News, John cited difficulty in recruiting staff as the main factor in their decision to retire from the business.
It's a strange state of affairs, isn't it? I mean, with all the other challenges, recruitment is a major factor. It's a major struggle. And it's not just in restaurants, but in bars too, closing a couple of days a week simply because they just can't get the staff.
As a recurring theme, Greg, and it's through all sectors, and recruitment and retention are major challenges for employers across the board, and this is just another example of that.
All right, upcoming business information session. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the next business information session, Greg, will take place at the Donegal Local Enterprise Office at the Enterprise Fund Business Centre in Letterkenny on Friday. That is August the 20th between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. The event is free, and to register, check out the Local Enterprise Office social media platforms.
All right, some developments at Century Complex, all in a very positive way, Kieran.
Yeah, work has commenced on the development of a 22,000 square foot extension at the Century Complex in Letterkenny, which will include an indoor crazy golf course. So when these facilities are up and running, Greg, the workforce at Century Complex will increase to over 100. The new project was designed by MH Associates, and the contract for the works was awarded to locally based contractors Dorian Construction.
That's okay. Great to see progress there. The World Cup, the Women's World Cup, concluded there on Sunday, and it's brought in the money.
Massive money, Greg. As you say, the Women's World Cup that concluded at the weekend generated over €520 million in revenue. The tournament sold over 1.7 million tickets, 400,000 more than estimates predicted, and broke TV records all over the world. And just from a domestic point of view, Ireland's 2-1 defeat to Canada was the highest viewed Irish women's sporting event of all time in Ireland, with more than 500,000 people tuning in.
Which is remarkable, particularly given time, given the time the game kicked off. Ireland, I said on the radio earlier in the week that I'm not saying Ireland could have won it. Well, I did say that. I'm not saying it now on reflection. But just watching a number of games, Ireland just didn't seem that far away. Like, it just seems that if we got a couple of players in or change a few things, that, you know, we can look forward to being there or thereabouts in tournaments down the line. Is that a crazy thing to say?
I don't think so. And I do agree with you. I don't think they were far away. Possibly not having had the experience of a major tournament like that in the past may have caught up with them. But as the results panned out, they were very, very close to maybe progressing to the latter stages.
Yeah, and the way I put it, like, on their day, I think they could have beaten the Spain or the England that we watched on Sunday. But as I say, maybe I'm just being hopeful and overly optimistic.
And obviously we're a wee bit biased too, but I did think Amber Baird got a raw deal, and given that the fact that she can score on the big occasions, I didn't think she was utilised enough.
No, and when she was utilised, she wasn't really given a fair crack of the whip.
Exactly.
All right, okay, that's a run through some of the news making the business pages this week. Let's talk about this week's podcast. What's coming up, Kieran?
Yes, on this week's Business Matters, Greg, I am joined by the owner of Malomia in Newton Cunningham, Linda McLean, and the network manager with Tech Northwest Skillnet, Siobhan Grant. A food scientist turned gourmet marshmallow and rocky rolls maker, Linda McLean set up the business in 2014, and in 2020 she opted to go full time at the venture. After graduating from Queen's and completing her master's degree in Aberdeen, Linda spent the next 15 years working in Germany, Holland, Belgium and England in product development. Last month, she opened a new workshop where people of all ages can enjoy the experience of creating their own custom-made treats. Here, Linda talks about her decision to build a new purpose-built workshop to make things more efficient.
Well, I was running a business from the home kitchen, and it was more or less totally dedicated to marshmallows.
Was it mayhem?
It was really crazy, especially at busy times, you know, at Christmas, or especially around Christmas, or if you're preparing for a big festival like Bloom or the Plowin or something. And every chair had a box on it, and you couldn't really get away from your work ever. And there was a bit of resistance within me to get more orders as well, because then the chaos never stops and you never get a break. So it was just really during lockdown, like I said, I had so many orders, and I just thought this could be a lot bigger than what you're making it, you know, or you're keeping it at now. So, we created the new workshop, and it took a lot of effort to get it up and running and, you know, do all the wee fine decorative pieces to it.
And I suppose, Kieran, not knowing all the ins and outs, because I haven't heard the podcast yet, is this sort of going down the route of what we might see in terms of, you know, like gin, see how it's made, sample it, that type of stuff? We're seeing that now with different types of foods or food experiences. In other words, it's not simply a shop, it's offering people an experience.
Yeah, Linda's, when she set up the business originally, it was very much product-led. When I did ask her that question, she does intend maybe to focus more on that visitor experience. She does have the premises and the wherewithal to provide that now. And the way she described it is, look, people come on 6th birthday parties, 60th birthday parties, family experiences, something different to do.
Yeah.
And given our not so nice summer, she was quite busy with the family element. It's a new departure that has just taken off last month, and she's extremely satisfied with the feedback to date.
Great stuff. Okay, now your second interview with Siobhan.
Yeah, I also spoke to Tech Northwest Skillnet Network Manager Siobhan Grant about the Lead Tech programme that begins in September. And I asked Siobhan who the programme was aimed at and what they can expect to take away from it.
The programme is aimed at either a business owner of a small local business that has a technology element. And I mean, even looking at yourself, Kieran, we all need technology to record an interview. So there's very few businesses now that don't have technology. But I suppose we're focused on businesses using technology. And we're also looking at team leaders within the multinational employers, the likes of Optum and Fintrue and that, who are in the region, who have senior people who are really technically competent but are interested now in developing their people skills, and in particular leadership, communication and a wee bit of project or strategy work.
Interesting stuff as always, Kieran. Now the full interviews with Linda and Siobhan available now to stream or download from our website highlandradio.com, and also available elsewhere, of course.
Yeah, and wherever you get your podcast. And Business Matters goes out on air on Sunday evening after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wants to get in touch with the show,
yeah, just drop me an email, please, Greg, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Righty-o. Now, you're not with us next week or the week after, so that's unfortunate, but people will still obviously be able to get their fix of Business Matters.
Yeah, we will plan to run a couple of playback issues, Greg, over the next couple of weeks, like we did last summer and over the winter. And there was a very good reaction. I got the impression that one of the podcasts that we reran, people mightn't have heard the first one, but they certainly heard the second recording. And the person that I interviewed was still getting feedback at the start of the year as a result of having heard it back.
All right. And just to remind, it's a massive catalogue there of Business Matters podcasts as well. If you're involved in business, have an interest in business or starting your business, literally some of the best brains from across the region have been interviewed in the past in previous episodes, and will be interviewed into the future. So make sure to listen listen back to the archive there of the Business Matters podcast. But for now, Kieran, enjoy your short break. We'll speak to you in a couple of weeks. But again, thanks for calling in to us today.
Good morning, Greg.
All right, that was Kieran O'Donnell. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show after this quick break. All right, we have been talking about electricity charges, prices, the bills people have been received over the last while. But maybe this is a lesson that you shouldn't always just presume that they are correct and take it as fact. Niall Harding is owner of the dealer and he's with us now. Hiya, Niall.
Hiya, good morning, Greg.
Right, so what was your experience, Niall, in terms of receiving your electricity bill and the events that followed?
Well, its saga has run for over a year. The readings that I submitted were never applied, and estimations were very highly overestimated. I found that the system didn't work in terms of trying to resolve it over the phone. Generally speaking, I spoke to people who were not in a position to do anything except recite policy. And eventually, I was told a reading had been taken. Our meter is external, so that the meter reader can read. And a meter reader, who, by the way, is from the ESB networks. The electricity companies don't read the meters themselves. They don't have meter readers. It's the ESB networks that read the meter and submit the readings. And the result was that the meter reading was extremely inaccurate, thousands and thousands of kilowatts over read. And all I got was, it's human error. Oh, it's just human error. So I asked for it to be corrected. I went, I bought a newspaper. I took a photograph of the newspaper beside the meter and I emailed it and nothing happened. And the bill continued to escalate with estimates, no matter how many phone calls I made and how many other times I returned the meter reading.
So how? What were the prices of the... What were you receiving bills for versus your expectations?
Ah, well, now that's just what I was about to come to. My expectation was going to be in the region of 240 to 300 euro for the account. And the bill was 2,560 odd euro. Over 2,500.
Wow.
Eventually, I did all the calculations myself. I have the knowledge of how to calculate the bills with the levies, etc. And I submitted the whole lot with photocopies, and I asked them to revisit the billing again. Didn't happen. So I finally resorted to making a final threat that I would go to the ombudsman, that I would also refuse to make any further payment, and I wished to have the matter brought to court before a judge. And I also intended to haul in the auditors of Electric Ireland on the basis that the accounting system of Electric Ireland was deficient, and there appeared to be no mention by the auditors that that was the case.
What happened then, Niall?
Well, what happened then was I got through to a very nice gentleman in Cork only 3 weeks ago, and somehow or another, he was able to fix everything there and then.
So they accepted your evidence and they revised the bill downwards then, obviously.
Eventually, yes. The whole bill, because I had been holding payments.
Yes.
So for the previous 6 months, it came to just over 569 euro, which I paid. I'm quite happy. Mm-hmm. But I was also told then by that individual that the best way to deal with Electric Ireland is to wait until you get the estimated bill and then submit the correct reading, mm-hmm. and they will issue a new bill. Now, I haven't had the opportunity to see if that works, but I have been speaking to somebody in the last 24 hours who could tell me that they have been trying to do it that way, because that's how they were also advised, mm-hmm. and it doesn't happen. They continue to send out estimated, exaggerated bills.
Now, on my bill, it says meter was read on and it gives a date. Does that mean they're reading my meter or what? Or is that when
if they have read your meter, But I would suggest to everybody that they read the meter themselves.
Yeah.
Because you're just accepting that the meter reading was correct.
But is there an issue with your reading? How do you know that your next bill for the next 2 months won't be €1,800, for an example? Like, you've won this battle. How do you know that you've won the war?
I have to wait and see. But I doubt it very much, because I also put it to him that there must be some basis for estimations, and that the estimations of average usage that I might have, it should be revised. So if there is an estimated bill, it is within reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens.
I think sometimes too, you see, people are reluctant. You know, if it's an estimated bill, people are reluctant to submit a reading in case it's revised upwards. I have spoken to people that have that fear. We're kind of conditioned. I don't know what it is about the Irish. We're so apologetic and afraid to stand our ground and afraid to stick our heads above the parapet. But I have spoken to people that are reluctant to submit the reading in case they go, oh, actually, you've used €400 more electricity than we estimated. Do you get me?
Yeah, I do. And I fully understand that. Because the way the bill is calculated is complicated. There are also price changes.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at there's dates and timings on the back of the bill that will tell you when they've had a price increase. And therefore there's apportionments as to when this was supposed to have taken place based on the number of days, and it's averaged. There's also a levy. And that levy is based on the number of days. There's also then VAT on a certain amount of the bill at the VAT rate. So it's actually a difficult calculation for somebody to make. So I can understand why people would be fearful. But I do suggest strongly that they check the reading that is on the back of the bill that will say whether it's an estimated reading or whether it's a customer reading or whether it's actually an actual reading.
Ita in Clonmany says, stay there a second, Niall. Ita in Clonmany says, hi Greg, my electric bill has almost tripled since my last bill 2 months ago. They installed a new meter at the end of June. My supplier is Energia. They say my bill is correct and I've always given exact readings. Like, is there anything that's happened in the markets that we're seeing bills triple now? In the a lot of people's bills that are coming through now, they've tripled. And, you know, this is Ita or as submitted readings. And I presume Ita feels like, well, she's going to have to swallow this. But how could a bill triple over summer compared to your first two bills of the year? I don't get it. And it's causing great anguish and hardship for people now.
All right. OK, well, what I'm going to say next is probably going to cause an awful lot of annoyance to the electricity companies.
They'll be all right.
There's a change. There is a new factor in just what you've read out. And that is that this person has said they got a new meter. Now, I am making a presumption here that that is a smart meter that has been installed. Now, what people don't understand about the smart meter is the smart meter works on the same system as our mobile phone. And the smart meter sends by GSM, by phone call, if you like, to a central place, giving the time and the usages. Now, if the mobile service is not working correctly, you will get very, very inaccurate information on your bill, because you could find you've been charged a high rate even at night time. Now, I live in a very bad service area for mobile phone, so I have refused to have a smart meter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know if I install a smart meter, I will be absolutely crucified financially, right, for electricity bill.
Okay.
Because they will not be.
Niall, thanks for your time. Maybe other people will take them on, and we'll see if anyone else can report back like you. Thanks, Niall. I appreciate it. Hope
well, Greg. Before I go, I'd just like to say, please, everybody, do not allow yourself to be bullied by the large organisations, both telephones and services, electricity. Don't be bullied.
All right.
Thank you very much,
Niall. Take care. Niall Harding, their owner of the dealer, and he threatened them with the ombudsman and to take action. Take me to court. And they did relent. A caller says, how could the ladies have won the World Cup when their best centre forward was sitting on the bench? Now, I say a lot of stuff on this programme. some of it's quite controversial, some's opinionated, or it's designed to have a conversation. I've very rarely had such a blowback from suggesting that Ireland could have won the World Cup. Now, what I'm saying is that I just thought that if certain things had gone our way, if the right players were played at the right time, i.e. our own Amber, for example, in the right position, that we were capable of beating either of the two teams in the final on the day. Now, if you could suggest that, if you agree with that, then if things had gone our way, that's all. But I am trying to be more optimistic. But it's at my most optimistic times that I receive the most criticism. And by the way, I'm not. It's not criticism. It's fun, and I don't mind criticism either. But it's just funny. All right, we're really busy on the phone lines today. It's been a cracker of a week so far with so many of you messaging in. And listen, the overwhelming majority of you just sit and listen. That's the nature of radio. That's why the national stations struggle to make a phone-in show and have to make up callers and stuff like that, because the majority of people just sit at home and listen, or sit at work or in the car and listen. But there is a proportion of you that do get in touch, and we wish it were greater, but we're really happy with the amount of you that do. I'd say we're as busy and interactive show as there is in the country, so we really do thank you for that. Okay, we'll have more of your comments then after these.
It's the 9 Till Noon Show in association with the Northwest Truck Fest this Saturday and Sunday at Milford Mart, with live music, family fun, a truck convoy and much more.
The new Corolla Hybrid Electric range is here, and the Corolla Cross SUV is the latest addition to the iconic family. Spacious and beautifully designed, it's perfect for growing families everywhere. And it's available to order now at Kelly's Toyota Letterkenny and Mount Charles. With exceptional electric drive time and no plugging in, the next generation is ready to take over. See the new Corolla Cross today at Kelly's Toyota Letterkenny and Mount Charles. Toyota, built for a better world. Terms and conditions apply.
Over recent months, we've all been dealing with the reality of rising energy costs, and we've all been making changes to reduce our energy use. However, if you are having trouble paying your energy bills, be sure to talk to your supplier as soon as possible. There are a range of protections in place for customers. Organizations such as MABS and Alone can also help. For information on these and all other supports available, visit gov.ie/reduce-your-use. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Attention one and all. Easy Living Furniture is turning 25, and we are celebrating with an amazing anniversary sale this bank holiday weekend. Join us for our biggest sale ever, and with free delivery on all orders over £500, this is one sale not to miss. But hurry, as this amazing sale must end soon. Visit Easy Living Furniture, Crescent Link Retail Park. Easy Living Furniture, making homes great since 1998.
Donegal Texel sheep breeders are holding a sale of 87 rams and 9 ewes in Rafoe Livestock Mart this Saturday, the 26th of August, with the sale at 12:30 p.m. Online bidding via the Mart Bids app. That's this Saturday at Rafoe Mart.
Donegal County Council has prepared a proposed material alterations to the draft Letterkenny Plan and Local Transport Plan 2023 to 2029 for public inspection. Public consultation runs from Friday 11th of August to Friday 8th of September 2023. For details, see consult.donegal.ie.
Just to remind you that Sunday week we are broadcasting live from London Town. We're over there for the Donegal Vintage Show. Well, it's the London Vintage Show. It's not just Donegal, by the way. There's people from all over the country that attend it, and a lot of locals too. We are going over there to do a special show that's broadcast on Sunday afternoon between 12 and 2. 12 and 2, yeah, okay. And we're going to chat to people over there, talk to people from the region who are now making their lives in London. We'll talk to some musical guests and all that type of stuff. So if you're going over, and I think there's a big crowd going over, let us know. Get in contact with us. Maybe we can have a chat over there. Or if you're listening to us in London, maybe you want to come along and have a chat and say hello to us. Now, you can contact us here at the radio station or send me a message on Facebook. Though my messenger is really, really busy, and sometimes I miss things, but I do eventually catch up. But anyway, we're going to be in London on Sunday week, broadcasting from the Vintage Show. You'll be able to listen to it on the radio. You'll be able to watch it as well and see our guests. So if you're over there, come up and wave into the camera, because we are fully interactive here. We do stuff on this station that no one else is doing, broadcasting the show across the radio, and you can watch it as well every single day. Right, Ireland's ladies were very unlucky. I mean, this is a caller saying this. I mean, the first game by a fluky penalty and the second game by a fluky own goal. It could have been so different. They just didn't get the breaks. They did us proud and I enjoyed their style of play more than watching their male counterparts. Thank you. I agree. I finally found someone who's agreeing with me. We do appreciate it. Caller says, if the youth on bail in Dublin after assaulting someone on the street, if you're old enough to do the crime, you're old enough to do the time. Judges' name should be published as it makes it harder for them to hand down tougher sentences out of fear. As a result, we've got young people walking away from their crimes and no consequences, only encouraging them to keep up the behaviour. The right to bail in certain circumstances is somewhat enshrined in law, and I don't think we want to do anything because, you know, we start doing knee-jerk reactions to stop people the opportunity to have bail, and but until someone's proven guilty, you know, that could have ramifications and ripples. I'm not saying it's not something we need to look at, but every action has a consequence. That's the one thing we just have to be careful of. Okay. That is where we have to leave it on the programme today. Wednesday show is in the bag. Thank you to all of you who listened to the programme and those of you who took part. We're going to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock. Stay tuned, though, because John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest with his usual mix of snippets and interviews and, you know yourself, fantastic music. So you don't want to be going anywhere after that. We have David James, Jive Time, then Ivan will bring you into the early evening with some fantastic programme. I think Jimmy Stafford's on tonight with Centre Stage, and on it goes. So don't go anywhere, and we'll chat to you on this programme tomorrow morning at 9.